learning the different cultures of the land, the local dialects, the topography, the varieties of flora and fauna. I must have walked the entire length and breadth of Deathlands. The entire focus of my life was walking. That's why I hate to expend much energy on it now. On my journey, I heard a lot about Warwag 1 and 2, about Traitor, and specifically about you, Cawdor. You appear to have a talent for insurrection. How many barons have you overthrown?
Only those who've needed it, Lars.
I envied those barons. The lives they led, the people they controlled. I knew I could never reclaim my birthright, but I could establish my own barony. One so powerful that it could never be defeated. I was born to lead, to command. But there was one problem. I had no followers. In my late teens, I discovered my latent psionic abilities. I found that I could sometimes sense what other people were thinking, and I assumed everyone had this ability. Eventually, of course, I learned otherwise. My power was undeveloped, truly a wild talent. I found I could read some people all of the time, some part of the time, and some none of the time. I needed a method, a doctrine to employ, so I could zero in on those individuals my raw powers would influence. Then I remembered reading about Charles Manson.
He was a sociopathic loser, a manipulator of the spiritually weak.
That's heresy, you before-time bitch.
He was a very successful manipulator. He spun out an entire apocalyptic mythology, which now, in hindsight, seems to be a prophecy. I figured that if people bought his mixture of mysticism, ritual, and paranoia a century ago, they'd buy it again. Especially with a new spin put on it.
Especially if your mind influenced them.
Quite true. The more I used my psychic gift, the stronger it became, like strengthening a muscle. I began encountering people whose minds were vulnerable to my own. I not only could sense what they were thinking, I could project my own thoughts into their minds. And, in short, I controlled that mind on a modest scale. It's probable that Manson himself possessed and exercised this power to a very developed degree.
But you aren't a Doomie.
No. My talent is of a different order. I interact with brainwave patterns. Precognition and empathy operate on emotional states. For example, Ms. Roth somehow intercepts the intent to cause harm, but she's not actually peeping into the future. Whereas I receive thought impressions, I'd guess that Ms. Roth mentally picks up flashes of color denoting emotions. Am I correct?
To some extent. The colors are very brief, almost subliminal. Orange for anger and red for murderous intent. If I hadn't been trained to interpret the bursts of color, I never would have realized what they meant.
At first, my followers were the walking wounded, the flotsam and jetsam, strictly the dregs of Deathlands. But as I continued my wanderings, I found followers, especially among the farers and the bikers. Through them, the new family managed to acquire a few decent blasters, but the life of nomads was wearing thin. It was too risky, especially after we drifted into this region. We lost several people to Screamwings, and even more to the Indians. In fact, I rescued Fleur from the Indians.
Yes.
A little over 3 years ago, we arrived in this area at the foot of Mount Rushmore. I'd heard about it in my youth, and I wanted to see it. We had barely pitched camp when a band of Sioux came upon us. We managed to chill quite a few, but racked up some casualties ourselves. That night, while we were tending to our wounded, the anthill, the commander, in fact, made contact with me via a beetle. The people up there had observed our fight, and they wanted a trade.
What kind of trade?
They wanted the bodies of the newly dead. They wanted the undamaged organs. I began a dialogue with them that built into a relationship. I persuaded them to supply us with what we would need to build a community nearby, and we would serve both as their protectors and their providers. They gave us seeds so we could plant crops for them and us, and in return for fresh bodies, they traded us the means by which to provide them with even more fresh bodies.
Let me guess this one. You didn't want to chill members of the family since you were so few in number. So you viewed the local Indian tribes as mobile organ banks.
Well, that's essentially correct. However, it's not as stone cold as it sounds. It was also a matter of self-preservation. The Sioux wanted us and the people of the Anthill out of this country by any means necessary. We would have been forced to chill them anyway. And at least their organs weren't just food for the worms.
Why didn't you trade our livers to the Anthill? As outlanders, we were fair game.
That you were. And indeed, that was my original intention. I changed my mind when Zadfrak pointed out how you could be of service to Hellskell.
Hellskell's been around now for 3 years?
A little less. As the word about us spreads and more people join us, I estimate we'll be the most powerful barony in the entire country in a few years. If, that is, we end our dependence upon the Anthill.
You want to take it over. To have all the pre-dark tech to yourself.
Wouldn't you, in my circumstances? Wouldn't your beloved traitor plan the same thing?
He might plan it, if he believed the payoff worth the risk. How can you get inside the place?
Up through the nose is the most obvious and most risky way. But there's another entrance.
How you know?
The AMAC couldn't fit through the nose, could it? No. They have a sort of matter transfer device up there, and a receptor unit nearby. When I receive large merchandise from them, like this wag, I pick it up in a cave about 2 miles from here.
Why can't you use the Matrans unit to jump inside the mountain?
It's strictly one way, evidently single point to single point. There are no controls on the unit, and it's guarded by beetles.
How do they receive your goods?
Simple. They lower a platform from the nose, and when it's loaded, they reel it back up again.
If you covet their possessions so much, is there some reason you haven't staged a raid yet, Lars?
The best reason in the world. It would fail. Our trade agreement would end. And I would be placing Hellskell in terrible jeopardy.
So why bring it up in the first place? Are you just an armchair general?
Oh, not quite. A general needs soldiers, Jack, and I have them. But for this operation to have even a fractional success margin, I need very special soldiers. For instance, soldiers that can't be traced back to Hellskell or to me. Soldiers that aren't family.
Realization rushed through Ryan like a fountain of cold water. He fixed his gaze on Hellstrom, who met it with a thin, mocking smile.
Shit, I'm getting a flash of triple red.
Suddenly, one of the tripod-mounted security lights exploded in a blaze of blue sparks.
Oh my! I do believe the Indians are upon us!
Within a heartbeat and a half, all the lights were extinguished, and the area was plunged into darkness. Though Ryan and his people were on their feet, guns in hand, almost immediately, Hellstrom remained seated. Floor and the Sekhmen, however, ran to and fro across the campsite. Ryan peered into the encircling shadows, trying to force his vision to quickly adjust to the sudden darkness. Hellstrom rose from his chair and nonchalantly ambled into the AMAC.
Set up a fire zone inside the perimeter!
Ryan and his friends took cover beneath and to the rear of the AMAC. They looked for something to shoot at and saw nothing. The M249 opened up, smearing the darkness with bursts of orange flame. Fleur dashed to the Sekhmen behind it and dealt him a fierce kick in the ribs.
Headshots! Headshots, you piece of feral shit!
Ryan's eye grew accustomed to the gloom. The moon and the stars provided just enough light to make out the dim shapes of trees, brush, and the sloping valley walls looming on either side. JB elbow-crawled up beside Ryan, his teeth bare and a humorless grin.
Maybe we should have taken out Joe when we had the chance.
We don't know it's the Sioux out there.
I do now.
That's the war party we saw today. And we've got about 2 dozen to contend with. We're bastard outnumbered.
Ryan reflected that if the Sioux were looking for scalps, the shaven-headed Sekhmen would be grave disappointments to them. On the other hand, he and his people had full heads of hair of varying colors, lengths, and textures, and they might present a terrible temptation. Christie's coppery mane in particular would be a valuable prize. He hoped that if Touch the Sky was with the war party, he would recognize them. An instant later, he hoped the opposite. The Lakota had warned him and his people about Hellskell, and he probably assumed they had thumbed their collective nose at his words of caution, and therefore deserved everything that might come their way, including scalping knives. Ryan hefted his 6-hour in a two-handed grip.
Lay down a firing pattern. We may not know where our targets are,